This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. This is The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, together with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. But now we check out how global markets closed yesterday.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
A lovely green day in the US because the Dow was up 1.9%, S&P was up 1.2%, while the Nasdaq was up 0.9%. Meanwhile, in Asia, not so great. Nikkei was down 0.4%, Hang Seng down 1.8%, Shanghai was down 0.5%. The only market that was up was actually Singapore. It was up 0.5%, while the FBM KLCI was down 1.2% on the back of losses from Todd Bluff and Axiata Group.
Okay, we will be covering that more at the 9 a.m. hour when the KLCI opens. But for now, we're taking a broader look at international markets. And we have Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, on the line for his take. Good morning, Joe. The Omicron variant has been detected in 17 U.S. states thus far. Are we likely to see a pullback from the rotation into cyclicals and investors piling back into defensive stocks as a result?
The short answer is no. It's too early to get defensive. I think that's a story for maybe the second half of next year. But right now, it's going to go to 50 states, right? Probably already in 50 states, we don't know it. But really, the markets are pricing in no significant pullback or shutdown of the government. The Biden administration has talked about that as well. The numbers out, look at South Africa. The South African stock market is up. It's a good bit underneath. So this variant is very, very important to watch, but I don't think it's a game changer where we were, say, 18 months ago.
But at the same time, Joe, U.S. Treasury yields rose rather sharply with the curve steepening. And if you look at just the 10-year papers, right, they move 9 bips, which is quite a lot. So what are markets trying to tell us?
I think what the markets are pricing is that the fourth quarter of this year is very robust in the real economy. I mean, the Atlanta Fed model GDP, real GDP, it's running like 8-9%. I mean, so, you know, we had a very soggy third quarter, but the fourth quarter has been very robust, even with the variant. So good consumption, capital expenditures, even travel is back, entertainment. So I know the variant has put a damper on the mood of the market since Black Friday, a week ago, so to speak. But the U.S. economy, the real economy, is robust, and that's what the markets are pricing in right now.
And, you know, I want to get your thoughts on Didi because of this upcoming delisting, right, that could potentially spark an exodus of Chinese firms out of the U.S. Now, with more than 270 Chinese ADRs and a combined market cap of $1.8 trillion traded in the U.S., what's the potential impact this will have on markets?
Well, I mean, first of all, U.S. investors are very U.S.-centric. They don't have a lot of money parked overseas or in the emerging markets or developed markets, whether it's Japan or Europe. But nevertheless, I mean, what I fear about delisting, it makes it harder for U.S. investors to buy good Chinese companies. I mean, China's a big economy. It's growing. Big middle class. A lot of opportunities down the road. So the delisting, I think, kind of takes away an opportunity for U.S. investors to capture some of this growth. Albeit, yes, there's a lot of political tensions, geopolitical risk, but the delisting, the U.S. stock market in general can absorb this, but the loser, so to speak, would be U.S. investors because when they do list in New York, it makes it easier for American investors, retail and otherwise, to participate in that growth in China.
So let's take a look at U.S. economic indicators. November's U.S. non-farm payrolls have drawn differing opinions from analysts. What is your take on the state of the U.S. labor market based on those figures?
I mean, in one word, strong. The labor market here is very robust, relatively speaking. When it's a household survey, you saw the unemployment rate drop dramatically, 4.6, 4.2. Yeah, that doesn't happen very often. There's a lot of statistics involved here. But in general, if you boil it all down, workers are coming back to the labor force. Companies are paying up, which is drawing the workers. So we're set up for a very good, I think, Christmas retail holiday season and into 22. We're not out of labor just yet. We still got a lot of work to do. But remember in September and October, we're like, oh, where are the workers? You know, once we take away the federal transfers, they'll come back. Sure enough, they are coming back. But the big but is corporations, companies have to pay up to get these people back, and they are. So the key question will be, how much operating leverage, how much can we pass on these costs to the consumers to keep their earnings going higher?
So, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, employment is doing very well. We are seeing also the Fed indicating they're going to accelerate tapering. Do you think they'll move forward the interest rate hikes in the U.S.?
I think the Fed has to, in the sense that, remember, this Friday, we get the CPI. It's probably going to be 7% plus year over year. The headlines will scream, this is the worst number in, you know, 3 decades. And that's true. So tapering will come faster, which means the Fed can start to increase rate, we think, incrementally, 25 basis points, by summer, if not sooner. But we're going to have a red-hot inflation number on Friday. It'll spook the markets, but it shouldn't spook, you know, any dip here by it, because a red-hot inflation number speaks of the growth and the dynamic nature of the economy. And I do think a year from now, when we're having this conversation, the 7% number will fade. It'll be half that level, we think, a year from now. So on a pullback, worry about inflation, buy the dips.
And Joe, I'm just curious, do you think that the Fed is managing market expectations well enough with regards to this eventual rate hike? Because some of us have bad memories of the taper tantrum.
I mean, if I was grading Jay Powell, it would be a low grade, relatively speaking, about managing expectations. There was a big pivot last week when he said, you know, time to retire transitory. Well, transitory should have been retired a long time ago. The Street already priced that in. So if that is behind, it doesn't mean it can't catch up. It doesn't mean it has to end badly. But, Ben Bernanke said monetary policy is 98% communication, 2% action. That's the lesson Jay Powell needs to learn really quickly to help navigate us the cross currents on where the Fed is going, anchoring inflation expectations, and then seeing us through to the other side. So 2022 is going to be a much choppier market. I still think there's a lot of opportunities. We're not looking for the S&P to return. Total returns 20% plus. But it's going to be still a good year in an active management stock picking market.
You know, I can't help but think, you know, because of this lack of clarity and also your earlier point that Omicron is a bit too early, a barbell strategy is key, right? Or are there certain weights that need to be a bit heavier?
I'm sorry, could you say? In terms of
your investing portfolio, when you talk about barbell, you know, the balance between cyclicals and also defensive.
Yeah, we still like the cyclicals, and you know, big tech is getting pounded here, but like on a pullback, you want to buy it. We're still very much believers of the cyclicals. It's too early to go defensive, and we will. We're going to have to go defensive when the Fed starts taking rates higher. That, you know, but remember, monetary policy acts as a lag. So if the Fed raises rates in 2022, the effects aren't until 2023. Well, between 2022 and 2023. We think there's more upside in the cyclicals. We're looking for the growth momentum as well. Still U.S.-centric. We like ASEAN. You know, China, I think China kind of primes the pump next year. Maybe we get a bid there. But, you know, to me, it's still cyclicals, too early for defensive. But get your shopping list right. Get ready to buy some defensive parts of the market.
All right, Joe, thanks very much for chatting this morning. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Some of the takeaways that I have is he's expecting a red-hot inflation rate this Friday when CPI numbers come out. He says it's going to be probably 7% plus. This will push the Fed to start tapering faster and interest rate hikes by the summer, he predicts.
But we'll forget about it very soon.
Just like most things in life,
most
right?
Things, right? The 7% will be like a figment of our imagination.
Once upon a time. Let's hope this applies also to COVID. It was just once upon a time you had to live like this. But I liked his comments in terms of communication at the Federal Reserve, right? So really the key towards guiding the market or the key towards placating market is all about communication. It's 98% of your work and 2% of it is action. Because when you don't communicate well and markets overreact and sell down, that's really when the pain comes.
Well, that's a debate, right, about tapering, accelerating tapering. Because just a month before, he changed his tune.
Yeah, I mean, he hung on to the song Transitory, like, you know, it was never going out of style. And then suddenly,
Let's take it out from the dictionary.
Yeah. So I think that's the problem, right? Because you want to calm markets, you want to say inflation is not permanent. And from an economist perspective, inflation... is the word you imagine, like, for the longer term. But for the consumer, the American citizens especially, it's now, right? What price am I paying at the fuel pump?
But that's an interesting thing. You say, you know, inflation 6%, but wage growth in the US is 10%. But that's the disruption, right? People maybe don't feel it in the pocket, but the frustration is the planning.
Yeah. And for us, inflation is now. It's not a long-term concept. So I think there was a bit of a disjoint in terms of what economists view it versus the ordinary guy. I think it's going to be a similar case in Malaysia because we are seeing prices rise across a lot of household goods.
I hope there's wage growth that commensurates with that.
Unfortunately, we really haven't seen much wage growth. I mean, you just ask any graduate how much they're earning and versus how much you first got when you joined the workforce, Phil.
I won't comment. I started my career in London. So.
Okay, all right. Okay. I started in Malaysia, but I can tell you it hasn't 1%. Risen. Yeah, the 1%. It hasn't risen that much.
Yeah.
It really hasn't. And you know, we'll be discussing this on the show as we follow the developments. Let's take a look at some of the international headlines that have caught our eye. We see something from SoftBank. SoftBank Group shares fell as much as 9% in yesterday's trading in Tokyo, the seventh consecutive day of decline, as the market digested falling valuations at key portfolio companies and regulatory opposition to the sale of Arm.
Yeah, this is a very interesting story because SoftBank reflects two stories here. One is the China regulatory pressure, because SoftBank has a 25% stake in Alibaba. Alibaba has a 5% stake in Didi, and SoftBank has a 21% stake in Didi as well. So they really are a reflection of the whole delisting of Didi, as well as the Alibaba management changes taking place there. So that's one side of the story. The other side of the story is the Arm's NVIDIA antitrust probe happening in the US, where they're worried that it will affect semiconductor chip production for self-driving cars and also for advanced chips. So I think SoftBank is a reflection of so many of these global discussion items happening now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Plus some not very fantastic investments, guys.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so being weighed down by it. If I'm not wrong, they're one of the investors at Grab, so it's been down.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.